WRCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
What if the second deadliest cancer in men and women could be prevented? Would you try to avoid the pain? And what if you could protect?
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
There were some elections last night, mostly primaries, and we'll talk about those later. But an incredible, if you haven't been paying attention, result from last night is that Kansas voters, deep, dark, red Kansas voters, have voted to keep abortion legal in the state of Kansas. And the reason I say if you haven't been paying attention, it would be shocking, is that we know from public opinion polls that now there is more support for abortion being legal in most cases in the United States than at any point since the start of the Roe v. Wade era. And so when the Supreme Court a few weeks ago overturned Roe v. Wade, 9 people voted and 6 of them decided to overturn Roe v. Wade, it is not representative or reflective of the will of the people of the United States. We now are seeing the proof of that in this vote from Kansas. The Associated Press reporting, Kansas voters resoundingly protect their access to abortion. Reading, Kansas voters sent a resounding message about their desire to protect abortion rights, rejecting a ballot measure in a conservative state with deep ties to the anti-abortion movement that would have allowed the Republican-controlled legislature to tighten restrictions or ban abortion outright. This was the first test of voter sentiment after the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in June, which overturned the constitutional right to an abortion, providing an unexpected result with potential implications for the coming midterm elections. The implications here are numerous. First and foremost, by 20 points, the vote was to reject the amendment, which would have allowed anything up to making abortion illegal. So a 20-point victory for the pro-choice side in the deep, dark red state of Kansas. Now, we've known for some time that Americans generally want abortion to be legal. Now, I know there are many people who desperately want abortion to be illegal, but consider the circumstances in the United States. Over time, the country has become more and more in favor of legal abortion in most cases, and the country has become less and less religious. And we know that one of the main groups that is against abortion is those who are religious of a very particular kind. We're talking about evangelical Christians. We're talking about conservative Catholics, etc. That group has shrunk over time. There has been shrinkage, and we have seen support for abortion increase. Now, there are non-religious people who are also against abortion. No problem. But the main opposition to abortion in the United States is religiously based. So these are not surprising numbers. The connection to the November midterms that's being made here is a very, very important one. Tomorrow, assuming everything goes right, things get a little crazy sometimes for Rachel Bitticoffer, and sometimes interviews get rescheduled. But I'm scheduled to speak with political scientist Rachel Bitticoffer tomorrow. The signs are increasingly pointing to this year, abortion rights and gun safety being good issues for Democrats to run on. Typically, running on abortion rights and gun safety regulations is not good for Democrats. If anything, it doesn't do anything to activate Democrats, but it does a lot to activate Republicans to come out and vote against whoever is supporting abortion rights and supporting gun safety regulations. The polling we've seen so far already suggested this year those might be winning issues for Democrats. The results in Kansas further suggest that that indeed might be the case. Now, you should be prepared, and it's already happening, for anti-choice advocates, right-wingers, kooky reactionaries, all the normal people that you would expect, to come out and say that the reason this vote went the way it did in Kansas is for something other than people just generally want abortion to be available in most cases. Doesn't mean you have to get one or anybody in particular has to get one, but it's available as an option for you and your doctors to determine is the right one for you. And they are already going out of their way to say this was about other things. And I'm not going to plague you with these examples, but here's one from Fox News where they made it out to be basically the pro-choice people bought these results by spending a whole bunch of money. It's not reflective of the actual perspective on abortion in the United States. Here's one example.
Kansas referendum is very interesting. I do think that pro-lifers should understand that so much money was spent by hardcore abortion supporters to make sure that that amendment failed.
Oh.
It also was a pretty, there was a lot that was packaged there. And I think that usually pro-life initiatives do much better when they're incremental. And so it's a reminder also that as Roe v. Wade was overturned and abortion law and policy is returned to the states where people get to weigh in, there's a lot of work to be done for people who want to protect women and children from the scourge of abortion or people who want to make sure that it is enshrined in law. So there's a lot more to be done there, and we'll see a lot more in the years to come.
So that's Molly Hemingway from the Federalist, and she's actually completely wrong. It is not about any of those things. People are less religious than ever. People are more in favor of abortion being legal in most cases than ever. The primary opposition to abortion is on religious grounds, and they are just out of step with the will of the American people. That's what's going on. And listen, it's Kansas. If Kansas is deep down actually against abortion being legal, you're not going to be able to spend your way to a victory the way that she's suggesting the pro-choice movement would be able to do. There are people who want low taxes, low regulation to the extent that they even, I mean, listen, I'm being charitable, to the extent they even know what these things mean. You can be for low taxes and low regulation and, you know, not teaching transgender in schools, even whatever that means, but still have come around on the fact that abortion should probably be legal in most cases. And that's what's going on. So tomorrow we'll talk to Rachel Bitticoffer and get her thoughts about what this potentially means for the November election. You know, there are such things as coincidences. There really are. I've had coincidences where, you know, I'm on a flight and I happen to be sitting next to Alex Jones' lawyer just after Alex Jones attacks me.
That is a frickin' predator right there.
Okay, like that's a coincidence. I don't believe that there's any larger message for me to glean from being sat on a plane next to Alex Jones' lawyer. It's just a coincidence. But then sometimes you start to see coincidence after coincidence, and it starts to really not seem like a coincidence. And indeed, it is now hard to believe that there is anything short of a concerted effort to cover up elements of the January 6th Trump riot planning and communications and involvement of all sorts of different parties in and around the Trump administration. What am I talking about? Well, here's the latest news. January 6th text messages were wiped from phones of key Trump Pentagon officials. It is starting to be very difficult to believe that these are mere benign coincidences. Texts were deleted. They were transitioning to new devices at exactly this time after being told preserve the text messages. The DOD wiped phones, all of the same group of people, and specifically at a time and related to January 6th. It's hard to believe in this number of coincidences. Let's look at what CNN reports. The Defense Department wiped the phones. Wiped and flushed, guys, the phones of top departing DOD and Army officials at the end of the Trump administration, deleting any key texts from key witnesses to events surrounding the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. The acknowledgement that the phones from the Pentagon officials had been wiped was first revealed in a FOIA lawsuit American Oversight brought against the Defense Department and Army. The watchdog group seeks January 6th records from former acting Secretary of Defense Chris Miller, former Chief of Staff Kash Patel, former Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy, and other prominent Pentagon officials. Miller, Patel, and McCarthy have all been viewed as crucial witnesses for understanding the government response to the riots and former President Trump's reaction. All three were involved in the Defense Department's response to sending National Guard troops to the Capitol as the riot was unfolding. There is no suggestion that the officials themselves erased the records. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Everyone involved who committed a crime should be in jail or prison. I'm not saying imprison people without due process and without finding them guilty. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there should be no exemptions here because of people's roles, whether it be in DOD or wherever the case may be. Everyday criminals get in trouble all the time for destroying evidence. White collar criminals, often when it comes to tampering with or destruction of evidence, end up in a situation where prosecutors go, it's really hard to prove that they acted intentionally. Going to be very difficult to prove state of mind here. And yet we know it's not that difficult because everyday criminals, street criminals, as they're sometimes called, get in trouble regularly for these exact same things. And there are just too many coincidences here to believe that this was not some kind of concerted effort. Now, you might recall that days before what was ultimately the final, the last and final January 6th committee hearing, there was the idea that on a beautiful Tuesday, the House committee was going to get recovered text messages from these tranches of text messages that were deleted. And hours before the deadline, the revelation was not recoverable, not going to get them, sorry. And every aspect of this raises questions as to in which organizations were there foot soldiers, for lack of a better term, for the Trump riot cover up. Now, we can't say that Secret Service. So part of this is related to Secret Service. Here we're talking about DOD. I'm not ready to say Secret Service was involved, but the longer it goes, it starts to get weird because on the one hand, we have Secret Service agents who supposedly said in the aftermath of Cassidy Hutchinson's devastating testimony about what happened on January 6th, we're willing to come in and testify under oath about all the lies Cassidy Hutchinson was telling. And I said at the time, well, great, get them under oath. But then we'll have competing under oath statements. Until then, all we have is nonsense. And then they never testified. And the House committee was welcoming them with open arms and they never testified. That starts to get a little bit weird. Then we hear, well, the text messages involving the Secret Service also aren't recoverable. We can't give you anything. Sorry. Okay, it starts to get a little weird. Now we find out that the DOD was wiping phones. Starting to get even weirder. So I'm not pretending to have an answer. I'm not positing any particular allegation of a conspiracy. I'm merely saying there's too many coincidences here to believe that this is merely a coincidence. And there seem to be actors in multiple organizations, at multiple agencies, in multiple levels of this, who don't seem to be forthcoming in the way that you would imagine and that you would hope government officials would be. That's where I will leave it. And the speculation can sort of go from there. If you have an idea as to what you believe took place here, find me on Twitter at @DPacman and let me know who was involved and to what extent. The David Pakman Show is a community, viewer, and audience-supported program. I encourage you to sign up on my website, joinpakman.com. We do lots of great things for our members, including a daily bonus show, now available in three ways. One, on a website for members only. Two, in an RSS feed that you can put into any podcasting app that you have. Or three, delivered to you hot off the presses via email hours before the show is publicly available to everybody else. Sign up at joinpakman.com. You can use the coupon code Obamna. Where is my Obamna here? Oh my goodness, I don't even have it.
Nuclear proliferation.
That's not it. Okay. Obamna, O-B-A-M-N-A, is the coupon code that you can use to get a discount off of the cost of your membership. Do the thing, folks. It's a beautiful thing. There was a delightful confrontation on Fox News yesterday between Fox News anchor Harris Faulkner and Democratic but very right-leaning Senator Joe Manchin. Now, the thing going on with Joe Manchin is absolutely beautiful. Joe Manchin is a guy that is not a particular friend to the Democratic Party on many important issues. But every once in a while, Joe Manchin is a Democrat and he will vote with the Democratic majority. And in this particular case, Joe Manchin announced that he's supporting the Inflation Reduction Act. The Inflation Reduction Act does a whole bunch of different things. It doesn't change the level of taxation on income tax for Americans. But right wingers have been flipping out, number one, because they claim, oh, it's going to increase taxes on everybody. And number two, they're flipping out on Joe Manchin because they started to think, sorry, I punched my mic. They started to think Manchin is a friend of Republicans. And to some degree, he is. But it's not always the case. And all of a sudden, they are hammering Joe Manchin. This interview was absolutely hilarious. Harris Faulkner, increasingly incensed with Joe Manchin. Let's look at some of the moments from this interview.
We got to know the bottom line on taxes.
Let me tell you the bottom line on that, Harris. You want to know the bottom line? The Joint Committee on Taxation? That opinion was only written by my friends on the Republican side. It was not done by the whole Joint Committee. So that is unfair, too. So let's be accurate what we're doing here. The bottom line is, how in the world can you be raising taxes when all we're saying is the wealthiest corporations in America, 55 of them pay zero to help this great country of ours, to defend ourselves?
Well, how does this change that? Because that's part of the corporate structuring.
It's
right?
A minimum of 15%. The tax rate was at 35% before 2017.
Right.
Then it went to 21%.
Mm-hmm.
That was a tremendous savings. But that's not good enough, I guess. All we're saying is, at 15% minimum, everyone in West Virginia I know, and most people around the country, pay a 21% corporate or greater. So why can't the greatest $1 billion of revenue a year, why can't they pay at least 15% for this great country?
Now understand, they're talking about a 15% minimum tax on corporations, but Republicans are pretending that this is an increase to personal income taxes. It's not.
Trying to also say, because this is the part that counts. I mean, people look at corporations and they know they've got great tax accountants. Heck, they have complete departments trying to come up with ways to find loopholes and to keep hire people as well. I mean, let's not forget that, too. But $400,000 was supposed to be the cutoff. And I'm reading, and I am reading, Senator, that
who's
it's below
paying,
that
who's
now.
Paying any taxes? Who's paying any taxes that doesn't have a corporation that has revenue of over $1 billion a year? Not one person. Not one person, Harris. You're assuming because they'll pass that on. The companies were paying zero.
No. I'm asking a different question than you're answering. I'm saying Americans, $400,000 and below now, are going to be taxed. Their taxes are going to go up.
That's a lie. That is a pure, outright lie.
I'm not a fan of Manchin. You guys know, I don't see these people as black and white. I don't get shocked all of a sudden when Manchin says something reasonable, or then all of a sudden he's voting with Republicans. That we know who he is. He's a very right-leaning Democrat, but here he's doing a very good job.
Taxes are not going to go up.
Not at all. And you know one thing? How about the people that are going to be saving, as far as on their Medicare, $288 billion, who are paying higher prices than they should? Aren't they? They didn't even assume that in the revaluation. They didn't talk about any of that. How about if gasoline prices go down because we're producing more oil to make more gasoline?
Well, and those are going to fluctuate.
Okay. So Harris Faulkner starts getting agitated to different degrees. And then eventually Manchin just has to tell her that she's telling lies.
I'm saying Americans, $400,000 and below now, are going to be taxed. Their taxes are going to go up.
That's a lie. That is a pure, outright lie.
So their taxes are not going to go up.
Not at all. And you know one thing? How about the people that are going to be saving, as far as on their Medicare, too?
Yeah. So repeating that it is just a flat out a lie. Then she pulls up a segment of Manchin speaking to Chuck Todd and then tries to hammer him on that. And she increasingly desperate during this conversation.
I haven't.
That wasn't dodgeball?
That's not a dodgeball. That, I'm not getting involved in the political. This is not a political piece of legislation. This is an American legislation. We need energy. We need to pay down debt. We need to accelerate our permitting process so we can build things and meet the challenges.
Yeah, but the elections are going to need some help. You've got a president
who's going to make a statement on that.
Approval rating is like as low as Congress's.
Well,
I mean, no offense, but you know that when you get into the 30s, no one's that popular.
Harris, are you scared we're going to do something good to help our country
and
someone might take credit for
it? My father served. Are you kidding? Service is in the Bible. That's what we do.
Her father served and service is in the Bible. That's her reaction when Manchin says, Harris, you sound mad. We're going to do something good. And she goes, my father served and it's in the Bible. But how is that even an answer? I know how it's an answer. Because there's a contingent, and a lot of them watch Fox News, where they believe if you are a veteran, then of course you always necessarily want everything that's best for the country. There's no guarantee of that. And if you're a Christian, you always necessarily want everything that's best for the country. But there's no guarantee of that either.
Serve our fellow man and woman.
That's exactly what I'm going.
Don't make this personal, because it's not. I'm simply asking that you've got a president who can't really help anybody on the campaign trail with the numbers he's rocking right now.
Well,
and so to have you say something like that, it doesn't sound supportive of your own party. And I'm asking why.
Let me just say this. I'm working with what I have here, and the majority party that we have is a Democratic Party. I'm working with a president who's accepted the proposal I've put forward and negotiated, which is a balanced energy policy. That's wonderful for our country. I know people who don't like the president or don't like Democrats might be upset. This is not about whether you like the president or whether you like Democrats.
So as you can see, Harris Faulkner is just desperate to attack whatever and whoever she can. But the truth is, on this particular bill, Manchin is correct. The bill's been scored. It looks like it will reduce inflation. This is what the Republicans claim to want to do. And they just can't accept that. They just can't accept that. Here's just one more quick clip.
That's a lie. That is a pure, outright lie.
So their taxes are not going to go up?
Not at all. And you know one thing? How about the people that are going to be...
And you know what? We already played this clip, so we're going to skip it. All right. So bottom line. Depending on your perspective, there are people who now are angry with Joe Manchin, and then there are people who now are thrilled with Joe Manchin. The reality is that there's sort of like a grab your popcorn element to this of, wow, who's going to flip out on Manchin next? And now it's Fox anchor Harris Faulkner who's very triggered. I don't care about that so much as this is another reminder. Sometimes these are just people. They're not all good. They're not all bad. Manchin is a guy that is way to my right. But every once in a while, and it could be for self-centered reasons we don't yet fully understand. I mean, it sounds like there's going to be some more domestic oil production. Manchin likes that. Yeah, it's potentially just from his selfishness and what's in it for me attitude that he's supporting this bill. But he's supporting a bill that's going to do some good things, and it's believed that it will lower inflation. And now Republicans are just absolutely flipping out on him. Let's take a more measured approach. This is a guy who is to the right of me and many in the audience, but he's doing the right thing now. And that's something we can all be happy about. We still don't have many of the results from last night's primaries, and we don't yet have the results for Carrie Lake, a Republican running in Arizona. But the new thing now among Republicans is you just claim that there's fraud even before the election has started. And that's exactly what Carrie Lake did. This video is from Monday night. On Monday night, remember, in the United States, we vote on Tuesday. The election was last night. But on Monday night, Vaughn Hilliard from MSNBC confronted Arizona gubernatorial Republican candidate Carrie Lake, who is a big Trump brown noser and suck up, because she's already saying that there is voter fraud. And see if you can find the list of things she does here that expose her as an obvious Trump acolyte. Take a listen.
You're already contending that there's irregularities and there is fraud in this election. At what point does Carrie Lake stop and say, am I undermining American faith in our elections?
Carrie Lake is going to help bring back honest elections to America.
But you haven't even laid out any fraud or irregularities. What fraud is there, Carrie? What fraud is there? This is serious.
You want to make this about you?
No, and this is about Arizona voters and their faith in this election.
The last person on the planet Earth, I would tell them, will make those numbers
authorities.
And I'm not telling you about
when are you- Okay. All right. So let's look at the list of things that Carrie Lake did there that expose her as an obvious Trumpist. Number one, she referred to herself in the third person, referring to herself as Carrie Lake. Remember, Trump would always say, they want Trump. They want Trump. He calls MSNBC MSDNC. That's straight out of the Trump playbook. She claims that there is voter fraud before the election has actually been before the vote has been tallied, before elections, the results have been published. That's a classic Trump thing. Of course, Trump famously doing that in 2020 in the lead up to the 2020 election for about 6 months. And then she claims that there is a crime, but she won't tell us what the crime is. And remember, Trump did that with Obama. Remember Obamagate? I don't even remember at this point what Obamagate was even supposed to be, because Trump never told us. And when reporters would say, there was one reporter in the press briefing room who said, what is Obamagate? And Trump angrily said, you know what it is. But he never actually told us, just insisting it was the biggest crime of the century or something like that. So apparently it's not just Democrats who steal elections. It's also other Republicans in primaries. I guess it's non-Trump Republicans. Now, as of this moment, Carrie Lake is leading but has not won her primary. I would love it if Carrie Lake lost her primary. Hold on a second. We're not even able to see this accurately. There we go. Carrie Lake currently with 80% reporting, Carrie Lake at 46%, and the second place candidate, Karen Taylor Robson, at 44%. And remember, this is the Republican primary merely to determine who in November will face Katie Hobbs. Katie Hobbs easily winning the Democratic primary. One thing that you will notice is that more people voted in the Republican primary than the Democratic there in Arizona. And we will see what that suggests might happen in November. But at least for now, it would be an absolute delight if Carrie Lake ends up losing. She is ahead by about 11,000 and a half votes right now, with one out of five votes still to be counted. But there's already voter fraud. Now, if she wins, what will she say about voter fraud? Will she say there was none? Of course not. If she wins, she will say there was voter fraud, just not enough to steal the election from me. That's the deal. And we'll have that clip of Carrie Lake speaking to Von Hilliard on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. I told you a few days ago that I have not been paying enough attention to this Alex Jones defamation trial. It's actually a really big deal because it is going to ultimately test the limits of what can people with audiences and the responsibilities that come with those audiences, myself included, what are we allowed to say about just individual private people before we are liable for defamation? And that is exactly what is at issue here. This is a trial happening in Texas. Alex Jones is being sued by parents of victims of the Sandy Hook school shooting. Yes, the one from a decade ago. And the trial is completely unhinged. Alex Jones seems to have almost like a cartoon lawyer who I actually wonder if it's a strategy because the lawyer is trying to cause a mistrial. That's one aspect of this. And we have video from Alex Jones' testimony over the last couple of days. It is wacky. Now, we are going to start in this first clip. OK, Alex Jones appears to be chewing something during the course of the day's events. And the judge, Maya Gamble, tells Alex Jones to stop chewing it. And then Alex Jones starts opening his mouth and says that it's gauze. And she's like, you're chewing on gauze? And he doesn't really say that. It's every moment of this trial is bizarre. Take a look at this.
I've been told that there it goes on and he says that he's sorry. And we'd ask that the entire party.
Spit your gum out, Mr. Jones.
It's not gum.
What is it? Because you're not allowed food or gum of any kind in the courtroom.
I had my tooth pulled a week and a half ago, and I had some gauze there earlier, and it's been causing me to have some pain.
So you're chewing on your gauze?
Would you like me to show you?
So it's not really clear. He says he had gauze in there earlier.
No, I right just here? Want you to answer my question.
No, I was massaging the hole in my mouth with my tongue. Actually, right here.
I don't want to see the inside of your mouth.
Oh, no, there's no gum. Hold.
Sit down.
So it's endlessly funny, but the problem is, what can she do? She could eventually say there's a mistrial, but it seems like that's only particularly good for Jones because it just delays judgment. Here's another moment in which they play a video of Alex Jones saying that the plaintiff dad seems autistic. And again, the whole thing just goes completely and totally off the rails.
Please play that, Melissa.
I thought it was an act when I saw
some. Oh, and I'm sorry. What's relevant here is Alex Jones is doing this stuff during the trial. And so not literally during the trial, but I mean, in breaks and on days where he doesn't have to be in court. And so his discussions of the trial are coming up during the trial more and more because the judge is not happy that he's talking so much about the trial.
The stuff on TV just because he came off his show. Let's just say he's a nice man, and he's not an act. He is being manipulated by some very bad people. But I'll just say, because I got to be honest, he's slow, okay? And his ex-wife is not. I don't think he's stupid. I'm just saying he's. I've got family members that are really smart in a lot of ways, but they're just real kind of quiet and have this way about them and. And they move at a different pace. Like they're fast in some ways and slow in others. And he's, I mean, I think Hanselman acts like somebody on the spectrum. And it makes me feel like an even bigger jerk. But when I saw him, I'm like, there's something about this guy. This doesn't look, and now that I've been around him for over a week, I'm like, okay, now I know. Folks, I don't have some calculated point just bringing that up here. It's just that I'm around these people and I'm looking at it and I'm watching what's being said and what's going on. And it really then makes it clear what happened.
So Alex Jones, during the trial, doing coverage during which he says that it seems as though the plaintiff dad is on the autism spectrum. Then here is some of Alex Jones' actual testimony. And it just goes, he just can't stick to the questions that are asked. It goes completely off the rails again.
Anything else before we bring the jury back?
No, no.
Anything from your side? All right. We're ready to have the jury back.
Oh, and this may not even be the exact moment that I wanted to. Okay, Alex Jones sworn in. Okay, so he brings up a piece of paper and he's immediately told you can't have notes. And then the first question he's asked, he just goes on a rant.
I know if you were here when I explained to a prior witness who brought documents with them that you can't look at any document for any reason while you're testifying until and unless one of the lawyers or myself instructs you to do so. So I'm going to ask you to actually just give it back to Mr. Reynal until he may think you need it, okay?
Dear God.
Did you understand all that?
I did, yes.
Okay. While you testify, it is not a conversation. It is a question and answer. So the instructions are to let the lawyers completely finish asking their questions.
So he's told you have to just answer the question that's asked. And then look at how quickly that doesn't happen.
But I think those are all, do you understand them?
I do.
All right, you may begin, Mr. Reynal.
Alex, would you please introduce yourself to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury?
Hi, I'm Alex Jones.
How are you feeling today, Alex?
I actually feel good because I get a chance to, for the first time, say what's really going on instead of the corporate media and high-powered law firms manipulating what I actually did.
I want to start by kind of letting the jury know a little bit about your youth and where you grew up so they can get to know you better. Is that okay?
Okay. And you know, before we do that, I just do want to say this on record because I've said it many times. I apologize to both.
Sustained. So, Mr. Jones, one of the instructions I just gave you is that this is not a conversation. Question and answer.
So she got the monologue about me. I got it.
And so
argumentative with the judge. Yeah. And again, this all could be a strategy to try to get a mistrial to make the plaintiffs have to start over.
You have to only answer questions that are asked of you. Mr. Reynal will ask you, I'm certain, all the questions you want, except to wait for the question. You may proceed.
Okay. So then at another point during this, the topic of Alex Jones' gravelly voice comes up. You guys know that gravelly voice.
Globalist, internationalist, Trotskyite socialists, unlike Obama, Trudeau, Macron.
Okay, that's me, actually. So now let's get to the actual subject matter of his voice. And then again, the plaintiff's attorney is like, is there any relevance to this?
So one of the things I notice about you is that you have a very distinctive voice, very deep, sort of gravelly voice. Did your voice always sound that way?
No.
What happened to your voice? Why does it sound the way it does?
Well, I remember the two demonstrations where I finally wrecked it. And one was about, I guess about 12, 13 years ago. It was actually film of it.
Objection
relevance? Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Do you have some way to tie this to the damages?
Do you have something to tie this to anything related to this case?
No. I'll address you if I'm talking to you.
This is so that the jury can understand who my client is. And...
Right. The jury could not possibly understand who the client is unless the backstory on his gravelly voice is explained. One more really interesting moment. There are two assertions that the judge tells Alex Jones. This is outside the audience of the jury, that he can't say. Alex Jones refused to participate, to allow discovery in this trial. And we covered that, meaning he refused to allow the plaintiffs to gather all of the things that he was in ordered to allow. And he says during his testimony that he allowed discovery. In addition, he claims that he is bankrupt, but that's not actually true. He filed for bankruptcy, and the judge tells him, you can't keep saying that stuff.
Mr. Jones, you may not say to this jury that you complied with discovery. That is not true. You may not say it again. You may not tell this jury that you are bankrupt. That is also not true. You may have filed for bankruptcy. I don't know that, but I've heard that. That doesn't make a person or a company bankrupt.
So, again, she is completely correct about all of these things. But what's the recourse? Is it to declare a mistrial? And if so, everything I'm reading is that actually helps Alex Jones and it hurts the plaintiff. So a completely insane trial. And on an upcoming live stream, we may or may not talk about it more. Let me know your thoughts. Hey, here's some good news. And we've been looking for good news lately. In a new poll, John Fetterman, the Democratic candidate in Pennsylvania's Senate race, is ahead of Mehmet Oz, the television doctor, by 11 points. This genuinely is good news. If Oz were able to defeat Fetterman, it would be a disaster. Now, there's still some disaster in here, but we'll talk about that in a second. Democratic candidate John Fetterman is leading Mehmet Oz by 11 points. That's a Fox News poll. The poll, and remember, Fox News polls are not particularly bad polls. The poll released Thursday found Fetterman is backed by 47% of voters. Oz is backed by 36%. So that's an 11-point lead. Now, it's still horrible that an out-of-state television grifter can get 36% support. At the same time, I think about 36% of the country, at least 36% of the country, believes the Earth is only 6,000 years old. So it's maybe not that shocking. But the important thing here is let's not assume that this is over. This is a critical, absolutely critical Senate race. If you break down, there's a bunch of different scenarios that you can outline. But most importantly, if you say which one race could control of the Senate hinge on, there's like a handful of such races. And one of them is the Pennsylvania Senate race. So if you're from in the state of Pennsylvania, you must vote. You must vote. We all must vote. And if you're from outside the state of Pennsylvania, you're still allowed to phone bank. You're still allowed to donate or lobby for donations, fundraise, whatever. Very, very important race. And again, we don't concede races just for the hell of it. But given some obscure race in a extremely red district for Congress and this Senate race, when we think about the potential consequences, this Senate race is pretty high on the list. So an important one to get involved in. We're going to continue covering it. 11-point lead is good. A lot can happen in the next 3 months, and it is now only 3 months until those midterms, and we'll continue covering this one. There's a really interesting kind of reshuffling, I guess we would call it, of right-wing media. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this today, and those of you who have been watching, listening to recent episodes, you already know about this. It's not actually happening, but there's a growing narrative that Fox News has abandoned Donald Trump. Now, the reality is much more measured. It's not that Fox has abandoned Trump, and it's not that Fox is completely brown-nosing Trump. There's sort of a spectrum on Fox News. But Fox News is doing the best possible thing for their business with their news coverage. Now, the nighttime opinion people are still sucking up to Trump as much as they ever were. Even to some degree, the Fox and Friends people are as well. But Fox News is setting itself up to be able to kind of pull the escape of the eject button and go to someone else if indeed Trump is not the Republican nominee in 2024. And maybe there's even a slight preference for someone else, but regardless, they're still staying, keeping options open, not wanting to lose access to Trump. Newsmax is playing up the war between Trump and Fox News. And of course they would. It's to their advantage. If you are targeting the most aggressively sycophantic elements of the Fox News audience, they are the hardcore MAGAts. And one of the things that might steer them to your network is to convince them that Fox News has abandoned your president or whatever. And so they're really playing it up, and they are mentioning at any opportunity that it's been 100 days since Trump was on Fox News.
And coming up, shadow banned, why former President Trump hasn't appeared on the major news network in over 100 days. That's Fox News. What's going on there? We discuss after the break.
That's a very explosive story for Newsmax. Why has it been 100 days since Trump appeared on Fox News? It's all self-serving and self-interested. That's all it is. Yes, Fox may have a slight preference for someone else. Yes, Fox wants to set itself up to have access to whoever is the nominee in 2024 for the Republicans. But they're not actually turning on Trump in any serious way. Then they brought on some expert. I don't even know who this guy is. And again, the topic is about Trump and praising Newsmax. And Newsmax is increasingly covering Trump not being on Fox News,
if not ahead. And so it would seem they would want to track this, and he could announce any day. Now there's some people who say he's not going to do that till after the midterms, but we don't know that.
And it defies common logic. How do you talk about the election for president without talking about Donald Trump?
And you think they're not talking about him?
They're trying to avoid him. I mean, he may appear sooner or later, but they're still going to try their best to ignore him.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned that.
Now, this is interesting. At the bottom of the screen, it says Murdoch's move away from Trump to be more establishment. The idea being that these are decisions being made not necessarily by Rupert Murdoch personally, although maybe he's involved. I believe, I don't remember which of Rupert Murdoch's kids. There's like Lachlan Murdoch and all these different. I don't know which one of them is highly involved at Fox News right now. One of them is. They're framing it as a personal thing. I think that this primarily continues to be a business and access thing, but we'll learn more about that, I'm sure, as we get beyond the midterms.
For Newsmax, what you are so happy that we do, as I know many of our viewers are, as I am as well, that we let our viewers decide. And we present them with the information, and okay, if you agree, great. If you don't, you don't. But even former President Trump has lauded Newsmax.
Certainly has, and for good reason. We give him that vehicle to at least speak to what he speaks to. And again, let our viewers decide. I mean, you know, we have an intelligent viewership, as I thought the Times and the Post did too. But
now, that's not true, I would guess.
We're finding out differently.
Well, it's interesting that the New York Times, of all people, are the ones that come out and say, you know what?
That's what got me.
There's a there.
Yes.
There.
There's a there.
Brian Anderson, thank you.
Normally, it's us telling obvious lies, but every once in a while, the New York Times will come out and say something. So that's what's going on. Newsmax coverage is increasingly covering Trump not being covered by Fox News in as favorable terms as maybe they would like to see. And again, these are all business ploys. Everybody wants to chalk this up. And this is sometimes what I'll meet people from outside the media space. Like, most people I meet are outside the media space, even though, because of the space I'm in, I know a lot of media people as well. The people in the media space get it. But then I'll talk to people outside the media space and they will understandably believe all these narratives. Fox News has taken this perspective for moral reasons. And then Newsmax has this other belief and reaction, whatever. Yeah, to some degree that goes on. But most of these networks and channels, it's not like the David Pakman show where it's just, there's no posturing. It's just my opinion. That's it. If there's a story I'm not interested in, I just don't cover it. If there's a story I'm interested in, I cover it. And I just give you my opinion. There's no posturing. It might be good for, quote, clicks, or it might be bad for clicks. With Fox News and Newsmax and whatever, it's all being primarily analyzed through the lens of what does this do for our viewership. And Fox News right now has made the calculation, probably a correct one, that they need to find, kind of straddle the fact that there is a repelling going on by some in the right wing of Trump. And Trump might not be the nominee in 2024. He might not even run. And so they need to be ready for that to credibly be able to rejoin the establishment, for lack of a better term. But they also need to keep the door open for Trump. That's their calculation. It's nothing about ideology, although there might be ideology that's part of it. Newsmax, I guess they probably do love Trump, but I'm sure there are people who work at Newsmax who are kind of see Trump as a buffoon. But their calculation is playing up the war between Trump and Fox News is good for our viewership and it's good for our positioning and it might ingratiate us with Trump even further so that he will appear on the network more, talk about us more, etc. That's what's going on. Don't think it's anything else. We have now learned that Donald Trump had the opportunity to go after al-Qaeda terrorist Ayman al-Zawahiri when he was president. Joe Biden recently making the decision to strike al-Zawahiri, killing him. But Donald Trump chose not to do it because he didn't recognize the name. These are now the widespread reports. Business Insider. Trump had the chance to kill al-Qaeda's leader, but didn't, because he didn't recognize the name. The al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri was killed by a U.S. drone strike, Biden announced Monday. Then President Trump had the option to kill al-Zawahiri, but chose not to, NBC reported in 2020. Trump wanted to kill Osama bin Laden's son instead because it was the only name he knew. Can you imagine? Intelligence officials briefed Trump many times about senior terrorist figures that the CIA wanted to track down and kill, mentioning al-Zawahiri. Two people familiar with the briefings told NBC that Trump chose not to pursue al-Zawahiri because he didn't recognize his name. He instead said, let's go after Hamza bin Laden. He would say, I've never heard of any of these people. What about Hamza bin Laden? A Pentagon official told the news outlet that was the only name he knew. The Department of Defense and a spokesperson for Trump did not immediately respond to insiders' requests for comment. Even though bin Laden's son was widely seen as an emerging figure in the terrorist group, he was not believed to be planning any attacks at the time. The president's preference for a celebrity-targeted killing. Not surprising. And listen, bottom line, Trump didn't perceive that there was anything in it for him. And Trump probably rightly assessed, I think this is almost certainly true. If Trump doesn't recognize the name, he assumes a lot of his followers don't either. That's probably accurate, but also understand that Trump could make a big deal out of whatever. You know, he can come out and say, you know who we got? We got Ayman al-Zawahiri. We got him. And this guy was a big deal. Bad guy. I sometimes would call him Abdul, as he often says during his speeches. And his followers would have said, look, he got J.P. al-Zawahiri or whatever the guy's name is. I think that that probably would work. But to some degree, there's this what's in it for me, and killing someone whose name is bin Laden is probably better. This also, by the way, supports the reasoning for Trump authorizing the drone strike on the Iranian general. Better headlines. It might incite Iran. Maybe it makes his Saudi friends happy. You know, who knows? And sometimes you have to understand the two filters. One is there something in it for me, which Trump asks. The second part then is Trump might not recognize that there's something in it for him. And so if we think back to COVID, if Trump had simply said masks are patriotic, we're printing 5 million exclusive MAGA masks only to be made available to my best and biggest subscribers, and then we're just going to follow what doctors say, he would have made big money. We know he makes big money off of the MAGA hats. He would have gotten reelected. I mean, it really is that simple. And maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow with political scientist Rachel Bitticoffer as well. And by the way, he might have saved 100,000 or 150,000 or even more lives in so doing. But Trump doesn't always recognize when there's something in it for him. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. A very good question about monkeypox. You know, a lot of right wingers, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, who we spoke about yesterday, are framing monkeypox as a gay disease. They're sort of talking about it like it's the new AIDS or whatever. And of course, it's merely coincidental that this initial contagion group happened to be among gay or bisexual men, but it is already spreading beyond that. And this caller asks a very good question.
Hey, David, Jeremy in Oregon here. Just wanted to comment on this monkeypox being a homosexual disease. What are these conservatives that are saying this going to say when they come down with it? Are they gay? Probably not. Then it'll be dismissed and twisted into something else.
Yeah.
A conspiracy. We were infected by George Soros or something. I don't know.
No. So here's the deal. At this point, it seems like the monkeypox cat is out of the proverbial bag, and we're already seeing people other than gay men get it. We're, you know, gay men also have children, and sometimes they pick up their kids. And so it's obviously going to go bigger. And there's a couple of possibilities for how the right will handle that. One will be they'll say, OK, like first it was from the COVID virus was from China, but then thanks to China, it's spread everywhere. They'll go with something similar. They'll say gay men seeded monkeypox in our communities and now it's everywhere and it never should have happened. That's sort of one possibility. The other possibility is, yeah, they'll just pretend they never said the thing about it's a gay disease. They'll you know, they're very comfortable rewriting history, revisionist history. That's a possibility. And the third one is, yeah, some other conspiracy theory. So they'll move on to saying monkeypox is being shot with some kind of Jewish gun by George Soros or something like that. Something along those lines, but they'll come up with something else. Whenever you think they won't be able to talk their way out of this one, because the only explanation they could come up with, nobody would believe, they come up with an incredible explanation and their followers believe it and they repeat it. So we still have not hit rock bottom, that I can assure you. We have a tremendous bonus show for you today. Top economists agree the healthcare and climate package that Democrats want to pass will put downward pressure on inflation. Republicans should want it, right? Right. An Idaho abortion law has now drawn a Justice Department lawsuit. We will discuss why. And thirdly, Joe Biden's task force has indeed now reunited 400 migrant children separated from their families under Trump. It's been done quietly. It's been done relatively efficiently, although it does take some time to do it. And we will talk about the implications and the next steps on that on today's bonus show. Don't miss the bonus show. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. It's one of many great membership benefits. It now comes with an upgraded experience thanks to some new elements of technology that we've implemented on the member podcast. Sign up today. Use the coupon code BIGVOTING22 to get a discount.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house! Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
nuclear holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house!
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Today, humanity is just one misunderstanding, one miscalculation away from nuclear annihilation. We need the treaty of non-proliferation of nuclear weapons as much as ever.
As the UN Secretary General warns of possible nuclear annihilation, we look at the growing threat of nuclear war as tensions escalate between the United States and two other nuclear powers, Russia and China. We'll also look at why the head of the UN Atomic Energy Agency is warning the situation at Ukraine's largest nuclear power plant is completely out of control. Russia's using the plant as a shield to attack Ukrainian forces. Plus, we look at why the American right is embracing Hungary's authoritarian leader, Viktor Orban, who just met with Donald Trump and is addressing CPAC today, the Conservative Political Action Conference. This all comes just days after Orban delivered a racist speech that drew comparisons to the Nazis.
We cannot accept in any way the kind of communications that includes talking about races, few races, and mixing of races. Within the Jewish community, this evokes a very painful era and painful memories.
One longtime aide to Orban resigned, describing his remarks as a, quote, pure Nazi text worthy of Goebbels. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Northern California, the death toll from the McKinney fire has risen to 4 after authorities found the remains of 2 more victims Wednesday. Slow-moving thunderstorms have slowed the spread of the blaze, which has consumed 57,000 acres, but the rain triggered local flooding and shifted concerns to the threat of mudslides. This comes as the northeastern United States is baking under a heat wave that is threatening to top records across the Northeast. In Washington, D.C., 7 U.S. veterans and their allies were arrested outside the U.S. Capitol Wednesday as they protested the military's role in driving the climate crisis. A 2017 study found the Pentagon emits more greenhouse gases than many of the world's countries, including Sweden and Portugal. On Wednesday, U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres slammed oil and gas company greed, saying government should tax profits made after Russia's invasion of Ukraine pushed fuel prices to new highs. Guterres said the largest fossil fuel companies earned nearly $100 billion in profits during the first quarter of this year alone.
I urge people everywhere to send a clear message to the fossil fuel industry and their financiers that this grotesque greed is punishing the poorest and most vulnerable people while destroying our only common home, the planet.
On Capitol Hill, Arizona Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema has signaled she wants changes to a budget reconciliation bill containing many of President Biden's legislative priorities on energy, taxes, and health care. In a private call with Arizona's Chamber of Commerce Tuesday, Sinema questioned part of the Inflation Reduction Act that would impose a 15% minimum tax on corporations. Sinema also questioned a provision to close the carried interest loophole, which taxes private equity and hedge fund managers at lower rates than most U.S. workers. Meanwhile, environmentalists are sounding the alarm over billions of dollars in new tax breaks and subsidies that oil and gas companies would receive as part of the compromise deal agreed to last week by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin. On Wednesday, Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders said he'll offer amendments that would strip out a requirement tying new investments in green energy to mandatory lease sales of millions of acres of public lands to oil and gas companies.